high tuition fees and lack of assistance has led Nova Scotian students to graduate with an average debt of $31,000. This is shameful. Instead of listening to students, our provincial government commissioned a report on the feasibility of post-secondary education in Nova Scotia. This report includes many regressive suggestions like deregulating tuition fees. It also suggests that high fees are not a barrier to accessibility. I think we all know this is false. For the upcoming Memorandum of Understanding negotiations, students are demanding three things from the government. One, to increase funding. Two, to lower tuition fees for all students. And three, to increase the non-repayable grant portion of student loans. We know that education is a right and should be accessible for every student. Affordable education is a better deal for all Nova Scotians. Today we are lucky to have Dr. Laura Penny speaking. She is a native Nova Scotian who graduated from the University of King's College and has a PhD in comparative literature from the State University of New York. She has taught at King's, Mount St. Vincent University, and St. Mary's University. She's worked as a bookstore clerk, a student activist, a union organizer, and has written for the Globe and Mail, the National Post, and Toronto Life. Laura has also written two books, Your Call is Important to Us, The Truth About Bullshit, and More Money Than Brains, Why School Sucks, College is Crap, and Idiots Think They're Right. And let's all give a round of applause for Laura.
Thanks so much for inviting me out here today. Kaylee and Rebecca asked me to talk about three main points. The first one is, how did we get here, right? Why are we in this situation? The second, where the money is going and why. And the third, why investing in education matters. In 1937, after the crash and the depression, Franklin Delano Roosevelt said, "We have always known that heedless self-interest is bad morals. Now we also know it is bad economics." And that is the main point I would like to make today. Debates about education often get cast as plucky, idealistic students and profs versus the hard-nosed economic realists who run for office and run the banks. But for the last 30 years in North America, and arguably much longer in Nova Scotia, our ostensible experts have led us further into debt and stagnant wages. Their policy prescriptions have not resulted in affluence for all, quite the opposite. In fact, after decades of listening to various suits, we have little to show for it but increased public debt, increased private debt, decreased social mobility, and much greater concentration of wealth. Bank advice does not seem to have worked out for anyone but the banks, who are still enjoying record profits. It is important to remember that debt is not the bank's problem. Debt is the bank's product, and business is super terrific. Moreover, if you follow the logic of some of their policy prescriptions, you will see that this is yet another example of a short-term cheapness that is not really cheap at all in the long run. And I'm not even talking about the super long run, right? Like, as John Maynard Keynes says, in the long run, we're all dead. I'm just talking about the rest of their lives. How exactly, if you are carrying thousands and thousands of dollars of debt, and working a service job at the new convention center that's supposed to save us all, are you supposed to buy the homes that they're gonna wanna sell when they retire? And if you can't buy their houses, who's gonna buy all those new condos that they're building? How are you supposed to cover the costs of the retirement homes and hospitals that these people expect? How are you supposed to start the small businesses that politicians are always saying are such a great idea? How are you supposed to have the babies we need to replace our aging population if you're strapped and stressed before you even start? Right. I mean, right-wing pundits love to talk about the crisis, right, that we're not having enough white babies, and they love to blame this. White babies, right, that's the important kind. And they love to blame this on feminism, right? I wish feminism were that effective. The most off-sited reason for not having children is fiscal inability, right? Yes, exactly. According to a recent survey by the Canadian Payroll Association, 6 out of 10 Canadians live paycheck to paycheck. Wait, it gets even better. It will likely surprise precisely none of you to hear that Canadians age 18 to 34, 75% of them would be in serious financial trouble if they missed one paycheck. Forget idealistic words like just or equitable, right? This just isn't smart or sustainable. Let's go back and see how we got here. As many of you may already know, the increased enrollments of the baby boom generation led to an expansion of North American university systems. Until the 1980s, public investment in university grew alongside enrollment. According to the economists at the TD Bank, who are hardly a bunch of socialists, in 1980, tuition fees made up a measly 13% of university operating budgets. 13%. By 1990, 80% of university operating revenue still came from public funding. By 2007, that was down to 57%, and it's only declined since. Steadily decreased funding in combination with steady increases in enrollment, right? I mean, contra the O'Neill report, we've even seen increases in enrollment over the last 2 years, mean that you are getting much less bang for your $6,000 or $7,000 than the average baby boomer got for the $2,000 to $3,000, inflation adjusted, of course, that they paid in tuition, right? So public funding goes down, enrollment increases, and what happens is that universities end up doing things like looking for more research money to help pay for the university, charging you guys more tuition, using more ill-paid part-time faculty to teach your classes, fundraising, right, which is a whole other budget line item for most universities, right, running these advancement offices. One of the drivers of this defunding is that in the 90s, the Liberals created the CHST, the Canada Health and Social Transfer. Now, of course, when they were quote-unquote creating it, they also slashed $7 billion from the federal money that flows through to look after healthcare and education. Indeed. In 2004, they separated these out, right? The government split these into the CHT, the Canada Health Transfer, and the CST, which covers social services and education. According to the most recent calculations, the Canada Health Transfer is going to hit $30 billion in the next couple of years. But the CST, the part that covers welfare and education, is a mere $11 billion. So this is simply to say that we're spending three times as much maintaining yesterday than we're investing in today or tomorrow. Every time seniors and boomers, who make up the majority of voters, have had to choose between tax breaks, new hips, and Viagra today, or a thriving tax base tomorrow, they have chosen the former. So the first thing that I would strongly recommend that you do is vote. I know it's hard to mobilize the youth vote, but that's precisely what politicians are counting on. As long as you guys avoid the polls, this country will remain a gerontocracy, more concerned with maintaining the entitlements of the olds than with investing in anything that even vaguely resembles a future. I'm dead serious about this. Like, the next time you meet someone at a bar, ask them if they vote, and if they don't fuck them. Seriously, they've already fucked you over, so it would be redundant.
Now, of course, voting is not the only thing that you must do, right? And what's really galling, what's really irritating and infuriating about the O'Neill report is that it comes from a government that some of you guys probably voted for. A government that has claimed historically to be on the side of the students, on the side of the workers. I like these folks a lot better when they were the NDP. I know Kaylee's been compiling a list of all the wonderful things Daryl Dexter said about tuition fees back when he was NDP, and I heartily encourage you to publicize these at every available opportunity. The way they've been governing, I'd say that NDP no longer stands for New Democratic Party. It means the No Difference Party. Harsh free market capitalism for poor students and gross buckets of socialist subsidies for wealthy developers is neither new nor democratic. It's exactly what I would expect from Tories and liberals. In fact, it's that thinking that suits will save us if we just lavish them with enough corporate welfare that has been partially responsible for Nova Scotia's fiscal difficulties and North America's economic meltdown. Saying let the market decide, as the O'Neill report repeatedly does, means nothing. Saying let the market decide is like saying let the car drive. It's mystical and it's a cop-out. It means that we don't hold the people at the wheel responsible for their choices, for the things that they buy on everyone's behalf. Instead of taking responsibility for their priorities and just admitting what everyone with eyes can see, that they, like virtually every government in the Western world, take their marching orders not from voters, not from evidence, but from partisan private lobby groups like the Chamber of Commerce, they claim that the big bad market made them do it. If you guys got nickels every time a politician claimed to care deeply about education as he slashed funding for it, you'd be able to pay your tuition. Consider just one bit of doublespeak. The Premier's press release announcing the tuition hiking suggestions in the O'Neill report reads, quote, Premier receives report aimed at strengthening universities. I guess in government speak, strengthen equals cut. I look forward to the announcement that they will be weakening the convention center by throwing buckets of public money at it. What happens when we let the market make the decisions for the education sector? When we embrace the bankster's gospel of deregulation and increased debt? Well, it's happening to the neighbors, and the results are not good. The American government is currently investigating and cracking down on its for-profit post-secondary education industry, and with good reason. Investigators for the General Accounting Office have found that private for-profit schools such as Kaplan and the University of Phoenix charge grossly inflated tuition rates, provide subpar, mostly online education that left students ill-prepared for the job market. For example, there were students with nursing degrees who had never been inside a hospital throughout the whole course of their education. Yeah, that's who I want looking after me when I get cancer. Former employees of these so-called schools confess that they were encouraged to pressure students to use hard sell tactics and outright fraud to make them take out massive student loans. Under US law, student loan debts can never be discharged. So these people have debt sentences for life. Canadian law is a little kinder. I do believe that after 10 years, you can declare bankruptcy and include your student loans in that, which means, 7 years of nuked credit. So you're only, not participating in the economy for 17 years. Yay. So what's happened here, right, is that some of America's poorest and most vulnerable folks who wanted nothing more than a way to improve their lot in a brutal job market now face lifelong debt sentences for an education they never really received. The pseudo-versities collect their short-term profit, but they do so at the cost of tomorrow's economy, as these heavily indebted students will never be able to fully participate in it. We're not there yet, but this sorry swindle shows us the logical conclusion of a deregulated free market approach to education. Again, we see that cheapness, in this case, offloading the responsibility for education onto the private sector, actually results in serious long-term expenses, to say nothing of the social and personal costs. The O'Neill Report reiterates the tired old claims that low tuition is just a subsidy for the middle class and the rich. However, this argument rests on a fallacy. Given that middle class and wealthy families pay more into the tax system, that is the best and most efficient way to fund universities. Moreover, the report's promises of targeted aid to help low-income students access the system once fees are deregulated aren't very meaningful or effective, given that aid only works for those students who make it into the system in the first place. And increased sticker shock ensures that they never, ever will. The sort of students who are most likely to benefit from access to education, working class students, minority students, who are still underrepresented in our system, aren't going to see the bursary programs on the other side of the door if they're scared off by the big burly bouncers of high fees and the sense that universities really are just for the elite. Historically, degrees have been a way of increasing social mobility, of ensuring that smart, hardworking kids, no matter how poor they may be, can move up into the middle class and contribute to the economy and the tax base. Anything that threatens access to education simply serves to create a permanent underclass with all that it entails. Less social cohesion, as the system pits haves and have-nots against one another, more tax dollars squandered on the poor health that accompanies poverty, and more tax dollars squandered on policing the poor. As our provincial and federal governments poor mouth and claim that education is an expense they can no longer afford, they prove more than willing to invest hundreds of millions, billions, in other policy priorities. I could go on all day about the federal dollars totally wasted on chest-thumping spectacles, such as the Vancouver Olympics and the G20, or the endless ads produced by Harperites for Harperites on every Canadian's dime. Yes. Very shameful indeed. Also, really terrible ads. Like, they should fire their ad firm. Let's just focus on a couple of their shitty ideas. Because really, we don't have all day. The first is, of course, the massive expansion of the budget for Corrections Canada. It is estimated that Harper's tough-on-crime posturing will cost Canadians $9.5 billion and double the number of inmates. I weep to think of how many degrees, research centers, and how much student loan amnesty those billions could buy. This is their policy priority. Hey, Alex, how you doing? This is their policy priority, even though all available research tells us that the crime rate in Canada has been declining for 30 years. Given this total estrangement from reality, I have another practical suggestion for you. Try to make your university look as much like a jail as possible. Paint bars on the windows. Hand out orange jumpsuits for the students and get your profs to wear the latest in prison guard chic. If you can fake out Peter McKay for a day, and really it can't be that hard, maybe you'll get some of that sweet tough on crime money. Jails are the anti-university. Rather than creating the security that opportunistic politicians always say that they will, they create economic stagnation, downward mobility, and again, a permanent underclass that we have to pay to manage. A recent American study suggests that those who go to jail even once, no matter how minor the charge, end up with decreased earnings for the rest of their lives, right? So it is the exact opposite of university. I think this is a good example of how bankrupt and bankrupting this way of thinking is. Or let's take a more recent and local example. It looks as though the provincial and municipal government will be spending over $100 million to finance a new privately owned convention center. The most hilarious thing about this is that some of those lobbying for the center think that this represents progress, that this will be the glorious industry of the future that allows you young whippersnappers to stay in Nova Scotia. This, in spite of the fact that experts say the convention industry has been in steady decline for a decade. This, in spite of the fact that hardly any convention centers end up making money. It is frankly infuriating that this is the best investment idea that they can come up with. It is also crazy-making that they think that these menial service jobs, running PowerPoints and getting coffee for visitors from places that still have industry, are going to keep you guys here and stop the province's brain drain. I mean, look, like, I grew up in Cape Breton, right? Like, if giving a bunch of suits a bag of corporate welfare made a good economy, everyone in Cape Breton would be Jay-Z. And, like, Sydney would look like MTV Cribs, right? It doesn't, I can assure you. For the money that we're blowing on a place to entertain visitors who may not come, we could do so many other things. Business types have been flipping out about Canada's low number of patents and poor record of innovation. There's money, public and private, in committing to a knowledge economy rather than letting our institutions suffer death by a thousand cuts. We could invest in medical research. We could invest in green technology research. We could invest in aquaculture research if our politicians were not utterly subservient to a handful of business lobbies and intent on repeating ideas that have failed for 30 years straight. We could start using our universities and community colleges to create new industries in Nova Scotia. Industries much more sustainable, autonomous, and lucrative than hoping people stop by because we're pretty. We have no clue if people want to come here for conferences, but we know damn well that they want to go to school here. Geez, even the O'Neill Report says that we make $3.40 for every dollar we spend recruiting international students. And then it promptly says, meh, about the possibility of recruiting more. I've mostly stuck to economic terms throughout this talk because these are the terms that politicians and consultants always use when they talk about education, which, for the record, sucks. You need to speak that gross language too and make it clear that these ideas are economically unsound and that they come from a fiscal philosophy with a pretty poor track record. Cutting post-secondary funding is not, as so many claim, an act of fiscal responsibility. Quite the opposite. It's yet another example of the government deferring their responsibility, of putting things off and mortgaging your future. They're kicking the debt can down the road so they can buy the appearance of fiscal responsibility in time for the next election. But if you're stuck paying off bigger debts for greater lengths of time, and that's precisely where the O'Neill Report sticks you, then in the coming decades, you'll be contributing less to the tax base and the economy. Or you'll just leave, like so many before you. I mean, this province is great at wasting money, but it's like 10 times better at wasting brains. If Nova Scotia is genuinely concerned about the fact that our population is aging and shrinking, then it is not just stupid, but suicidally stupid to cut funding to the one sector that dependably brings thousands of new people, young people, to the province every year. Moreover, the benefits of education are not merely financial. It's a great way to facilitate the immigration process, right, which helps us churn back that gray tide. It also means more delicious snacks and delightful festivals. Countless studies suggest that education has significant political and social benefits, ranging from greater civic engagement, more voting, more volunteering, to better health. Plus, then, there are all those wonderful things that no stat-type study can adequately capture, like a sense of your culture and history, or the ability to think critically, or how much you guys love microbes or literature, or whatever your thing is. The critical mass of students is one of the reasons why there is, on any given weekend in Halifax, a bunch of cool things to hear and see and do, and interesting people to talk to. The exceedingly narrow and obsessive focus on return and investment, on making you guys pay out, is not just philistine, civilized, uncivilized, and inhumane. It's also ironic in that it may well come back to bite the public on the arse sooner rather than later. Publicly funded services such as healthcare and education teach us a very important lesson, that we're all in this together, that we are responsible for each other, and that taxes are the price of civilization. Civilization may be expensive, but it's way cheaper and ever much more pleasant than a police state, tourist trap, or corporate fief. But the ethos of policies like those recommended by the O'Neill Report is that everyone is in this thing alone and should pay their own damn way. If you learn the lessons they are insisting that you learn, they can look forward to a pretty grim future under the government you guys will run when you get older. What's the return on investment of your grandma? Not much, right?